This is an interview for the Shoe Workers Oral History Project at the Museum LA. The date is January 22nd, 2010. This is Andrea Lungier, and today I'm interviewing Neil Hanley at Falcon Shoe in Lewiston, Maine. Neil, could you start just by giving me your full name?
Neil Stephen Hanley.
And how do you spell Hanley?
H-A-N-L-E-Y.
And where and when were you born?
I was born in Norway, Maine in August of 1966.
And did you grow up there or surrounding community?
Yeah, in the South Paris area. Yeah.
And what was it like in South Paris at that time?
It was a nice place to grow up. I grew up on Paris Hill, and it was a nice, close-knit community. A lot of good friends growing up.
Yeah.
It was a good place to grow up. Great public schools. Safe. Not a lot of crime.
And what were your parents' names?
My father's Bruce, and my mother, Nancy.
And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had three brothers, so there's four boys. Growing up, yeah. No girls.
Well, talk to me a little bit about your father. Was he, at that time when you were growing up, in the shoe industry?
Yes, yeah. He moved up from Lynn, Massachusetts in 1963 and started Falcon Shoe with Ted Johansson. I think he actually lived in the YMCA for a few months until they settled in and found places to live. So he was here 3 years before I was born. So I've been around this place for my whole life.
Yeah. Now, did he meet your mom here, or had he already?
He met my mom. They were married in 1960 or 59, and they met in Massachusetts.
So she was from Massachusetts?
Yeah, and she actually worked in the shoe factory too as a secretary.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
So he came here and started Falcon.
Yep.
And you were here a lot as a young child.
Oh yeah, so, yeah.
And
weekends
your brothers?
And yeah, we'd come in with Dad on the weekend, and it was kind of fun because the place was dark, but we'd run around and ride around on the conveyors and things like that up and down. It was fun.
Yeah, well, talk to me about what interested you in following in your dad's footsteps. Did he teach you different aspects of shoemaking?
Not so much, really. I was always fascinated with math and mechanics and things like that. I went to school for electrical engineering, of all things, but I decided after 4 years of that I really didn't want to be in the electronics industry. I wanted to be more hands-on in manufacturing, and that certainly was due to my father's influence in being in the shoe factory throughout high school, seeing how things are done, the challenges. So that's really how I got into it. I interviewed here with Ted Johansson right out of college, and he offered me a position, and I wanted to stay in the area anyway, so I prefer to stay in Maine versus, you know, say Silicon Valley or something like that. That's a big draw too, was to stay in Maine. Yeah.
So what year was that you came on as a regular employee?
1988, September of 88.
So you've been here your whole career?
Yeah, my first day here was my 17th birthday in 1983, because I was old enough to go to work and work machinery, so. My father called me and said, "We need some help. Get your Fanny in here." So that's how I started. Yeah.
And so what year did your father retire? Did you overlap for some years?
Yeah, he retired in, I want to say 2002 or 2003. Maybe it was before that. But yeah, so I worked for my dad for a number of years.
Was he your supervisor in the way?
Well, I was an engineer, so I was responsible to really the whole upper senior management team, which was my dad and Ted. But yeah, it was a little awkward at times working for Dad, but never a bad thing, really.
Yeah. Well, talk to me about Ted Johansson. I know that people have described him in, many different ways. One aspect was that he invested in the people who worked
Yeah, he was. He took very seriously. Takes very seriously the responsibility to the community and to the employees. I mean, one of the first shoe factories that actually had a retirement plan and profit sharing plans, health insurance, things like that. Very, very responsible and very caring for the community. And I would just add that when I started, I worked the regular shift as a cutter, because Ted thought it was very important for me, even as an engineer, to learn the aspects of the business, the hands-on stuff, the importance of leather, leather cutting quality, different aspects of the leather. So I did that for 3 months full-time, and then after the shift ended, I would stay later, and Ted would kind of mentor me in some of the engineering aspects of shoemaking. So it was a good learning experience and a lot of fond memories.
Can you talk to me about Falcon Shoe itself and sort of its evolution and how you've managed to survive, and you know, especially into the 80s and 90s, yeah, where we just saw all the shoe shops closing?
Right. It's I've seen, of course, the whole range of products that Falcon has done. I grew up wearing the children's shoes that the company started making, you know, little infants to young men's shoes. Of course, in the mid-70s into the 80s, the foreign markets influenced that, and they had to diversify. And in the late 70s, early 80s, Falcon got into making men's footwear and using direct-attached polyurethane outsoles and PVC outsoles. And that was kind of a natural transition to then get into safety boots, outdoor work boots, performance boots for hunting and outdoors. And it was in the late 80s, I think, that we made the last children's shoes. For a while there, we were doing children's shoes and men's boots, but it got to the point where we could no longer be competitive in the children's market, so we transitioned into 100% men's boots. And just got more and more focused on safety footwear. Parent company Iron Age bought Falcon, I want to say in the late 80s, early 90s, and pretty much it made us focus on safety footwear. Got really good at that, and here we are, it's 2010, and we're doing high performance firefighter boots with all the latest technologies in safety footwear.
Can you talk to me about other stories about, you know, there must be stories, you've worked here so many years. Anecdotes, funny anecdotes.
Yeah, it's a story I always bring up because Roland Landry is my current business partner here. My first job here, he was actually my supervisor. And he's not that much older than me, but of course, he was my boss. They used to process the work in plastic tote buckets that were painted different colors. I think they had 10 colors, and each color represented a day sheet. And let's say today, okay, the goal is to get the blue totes out of the factory. Tomorrow would be red, then yellow, then green, and so on, and that would rotate after 10 days. I guess they had so much work that they needed more tote baskets, so my job was to paint the tote baskets. And they found a dark corner in the back room for me to do that, and I was using oil-based paint. And they started me first thing in the morning. They said, okay, paint these tote baskets red. I started painting, and I couldn't hear the buzzer for the break, so I worked through coffee break in the morning, lunch break, and then it was 3:30 in the afternoon. Somebody came out and said, hey, we're closing up. I guess the fumes had gotten to me. So I always pick on Roland when we're telling stories, but that's a good story. And when I was real young, remember running up and down the stairs here, because it's a real fancy spiral staircase that comes into the building. And on a Saturday, we were occupying ourselves, my brothers and I, while Dad was in the office doing some work, and I was running up the stairs, and I ran into this guy. I still to this day don't know who he was, probably the custodian, but at the time, big, imposing fellow, and he's, what are you kids doing in this hallway? Scared the daylights out of me. I don't think I had the nerve to say, do you know who my father is? That's a memory that I'll keep forever, too.
Now, did any of your other three brothers work in the shop here?
Yeah, and all of them worked here at one point in time, yeah. My oldest brother, Scott, worked third shift as a computer stitcher. My next oldest brother, Dana, worked in the shipping department. And my next youngest brother, Carl, worked as a computer stitcher, and he also worked in shipping. But they basically just worked summers in high school and college.
I guess I'm interested to know, in terms of Falcon Shoe, do you see, well, obviously you're optimistic that you found a niche in the shoe industry to stay viable in this. What do you see as happening with your company and to survive? Do you feel like that you're at a place where you're so specific that you provide something nobody else can?
I think that's true today, but I wouldn't bet on it being true tomorrow or, 3 years or 5 years from now, because the industry's evolving. The Asians are getting really good at making footwear, making really good quality footwear. What saves us today or keeps us alive today is the fact that we can do smaller product lines, smaller quantities. To the extent that that stays important, I think we'll be okay. Or we'll have to see, what's the next biggest thing. We're working on some radio frequency identification devices to go in footwear that's specific to the mining industry. So folks that go into mines can have radio tracking of the footwear for safety reasons. I think the only way we'll survive is by going after these niches. We won't certainly ever be a high volume fashion type footwear place. Used to be, in the 70s, they would go to a single shoe show in New York City, and they would peddle the shoes to the Nordstroms and the Macy's and the big department stores, children's shoes, and they would sell the factory out for a year. They'd take orders and basically be able to know that they were going to have production for a year. Nowadays, we can see out maybe a month or two, and that's good. That's a good thing for us. I've seen days where we didn't know we were going to schedule the next day. So.
Yeah. So a month or two is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, what did you observe in the Lewiston community? Because you've been, have you lived in the Lewiston community or traveled from outside all these years?
I did live in Auburn for 10 years. But I lived in South Paris my whole childhood, and now I live about 25 miles north of Lewiston and Hartford, but certainly seen the changes. I mean, from the 70s when I came here as a kid, very bustling, booming, a lot of folks. I used to go Christmas shopping with my mom down on Lisbon Street. I don't know.
Was Peck there?
Peck and Benoit's. Benoit's is where we had to get our Cub Scout uniforms. It was the only place in the area. There was nothing in South Paris, so I had to go there. Our Cub Scout uniforms, but saw that the dwindling of that. And of course, this building where we're located today was full.
Just full of different businesses.
Full of different businesses, shoe factories mostly. But
that must have been a big change to see them disappear one by one.
Yeah.
Was that mostly in the 80s?
Yes.
Yeah.
When I started full time in 88, it was pretty much all of them had gone. It was ourselves and Acorn Products, two of the slippers, was in this building. The rest of the building was pretty much vacant. Etonic had a distribution, but they didn't do any manufacturing here.
And because so many of those businesses closed, there's a lot of people with skills that went away. Do you have difficulty hiring people with some of those skills, or do you just automatically train? Do you know what I'm asking? Have you lost your population?
I think, it's been enough years now that the folks that were skilled in footwear manufacturing, it's been such a long period of time since the factories closed. I say a long period of time, 10, 15 years, that those folks that had those skills have moved on and gotten training in other things. So it is harder and harder to find experienced folks today. But the folks that we have hired that had no experience have worked out pretty well for us. They're eager to learn. And, you know, as long as you do a good job screening them,
right,
it's worked out pretty good. And the skills, there's a lot of skills are the same, but we have computerized machinery today that we didn't have 20 years ago. But it's more attractive for younger folks that have grown up with Nintendos and all that kind of computer stuff, that they'd probably rather work a computerized machine than an old-fashioned type sewing machine or cutting machine.
Were you old enough to experience sort of the social atmosphere of all the shoe workers? In the heyday when,
yeah,
you know, there were all these shoe shops, people would go out after work and...
No, not myself,
that
really.
That was sort of
a little late in the game. Before my time, yeah. But I've heard stories. The old the Roundhouse, which is, I guess Margarita's is there now, but that was a place for all the shoe gurus to hang out, and the salesmen. And I guess in the day, a thread salesman or a leather salesman could come to the area and spend a week visiting all the various shoe shops. And today, we're lucky if we see a thread salesman once every 6 months. He's only got the one client to call on. So
Are there any others?
In the area right now? Yeah, there are. There are a handful.
Smaller
specialty stuff. Allen Edmonds locally, they do real high-end stuff, you know, shoes that retail for $400 or $500.
Right.
Hand sewns and exotic leathers. Another niche.
Yeah, right, exactly. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you think is important to add, something I didn't know to ask?
You've done a thorough job of asking me questions. I guess the only thing I would add is that growing up in the footwear industry and growing up in Falcon, I think it's probably true of a lot of the other shoe shops that are no longer here, but it's really a family atmosphere. Growing up here, and you know, the folks here I've known for as long as I've worked here, and it's, you get to know them, you can become close. You know, you don't necessarily hang out with them on the weekends, but you know, you look forward to seeing them during the week, and you get to know their families and things like that. And when you have to do anything like downsizing, it's very sad. It's very traumatic and difficult on everybody, not just the people who are facing layoffs, things like that. So we hate to do it. We're so proud and happy that we're still here today and we're still employing some good quality folks.
Well, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.